Are the Common Core an improvement in standards? We will talk to researcher Chris Tankin about his new study. Is kindness radical? Our activist of the week thinks so. We will also hear from Matt Damon's mom, what's trending in education news, and have our weekly tribute to Howard Zinn. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins. It's time to take a look at the top trending news stories in education. Number one.
Common Core is out. The Second Amendment is in. That, the latest quote from Donald Trump. That's his stump speech for education, Jed.
Common Core is out.
Common Core is out. The Second Amendment is in.
Okay, so what's the connect? So, okay. This conjures up some great imagery, doesn't it?
So only Donald Trump could put those
standards are out, but guns are in. Yeah. Is that what
he could only put those two things together and make them sound like they're a coherent policy?
Yeah.
So Second Amendment rights and the Common Core somehow come together.
I get it. No standard except the standard of the right to bear arms.
Your standard of the right to bear arms. Right. In fact, that's all we're going to teach in schools. No, this came out of a speech he did, though, where he really kind of uses the same old tactic, which is America's test scores aren't as good as they used to be. They're falling. And in fact, under my presidency, getting rid of the Common Core, returning local control, all of those things, we're going to quote, as he's been saying, that's how you make America great again. Get rid of the Common Core, enforce the Second Amendment, and have local control. Make America great again.
Number two.
From across the pond, technology and teachers.
Oh, from across the pond.
Across the pond. So, Jed, who knew that Nicky Morgan was, first of all, the British education secretary? Who knew the Brits had an education secretary?
Well, I think the Brits might have known that.
Okay.
But, I don't know.
You would think it was only Arne Duncan was the world education secretary.
Oh, I see.
But hey, so Nicky Morgan had some interesting things to say, though, about technology. One of the more exciting things she did say, though, that people have been talking about is the fact that we need to be very careful and see that excellent teachers and schools are not replaced by technology.
Huh.
You agree with that?
I agree with that.
Because we've been hearing over here that, quote, you know, looking at some of the smart technology and tests and things like that, that teachers in one way are going to become obsolete. Mm. So I want to give Nicky Morgan, British Education Secretary, kudos for recognizing that teachers are just as important as technology.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
Chris Tankin is Associate Professor of Education at Seton Hall University. He recently did a study comparing the Common Core state standards to its New Jersey predecessors, and he is here to talk to us about his very interesting, or should I say, complex findings. Chris, welcome to Busted Pencils.
Hello, everyone.
You have a new study out, a comparison of higher order thinking between the Common Core standards and the 2009 New Jersey content standards in high school. What is the big push for complex standards? I mean, what's wrong with standards?
Okay, so when you look at the economics literature on global competitiveness and the mainstream school reform literature on economic global competitiveness, one thing that continues to come through as a major theme in that literature is this idea of strategic, creative, and innovative thinkers. So what you're seeing now in terms of the mainstream corporate world, like IBM, Council on Competitiveness, the Institute for Management Development, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, a continued drumbeat for students, employees, people in general, to be able to be more creative, more innovative, more entrepreneurial, and more strategic in their thinking.
Okay, and so we can't disagree with that because that would be a wonderfully well-equipped student to enter the world, even if it's not just from an economic standpoint. But the economic literature wants creative, innovative thinking types of people.
Sure, the school reform movement is driven by the economics literature, this ideology that we have to create some kind of model employee. Now, we know public schools is a lot more than that, but just looking at the literature that's driving the reform, that's where that's coming.
So then the answer is then to write harder standards, right?
Well, see, this is the issue that we looked at. There's a difference between difficulty and complexity. And that's the, I think, the important nuance. The literature is asking for complexity. What we have received from the vendors of the Common Core is this idea of difficulty, and in some cases, contrived difficulty. So I think there's a mismatch between the Common Core, although the vendors claim that it's higher order thinking, when it's really difficulty masquerading as complexity.
You take this idea of the Common Core state standards, the assumption that, of course, they're much more complex, and you put it to the test by looking at the old standards in New Jersey, the 2009 New Jersey state standards in math and English language arts, and the 2010 Common Core state standards in English language arts and math, and lay them side by side and look for the idea of which one actually promotes complexity. And the answer is, Chris?
Well, we were surprised to find out, given the rhetoric surrounding the Common Core, that the former New Jersey high school standards actually provided more opportunities for complex and strategic thinking.
Okay, so right now I'm a superintendent. I'm just now screaming and crying because I just spent probably the last 5 years preparing every one of my teachers to teach the Common Core state standards. It's cost me thousands of dollars. You're ruining my life?
Well, I think what we're doing is we're providing information for superintendents and high school administrators now to go back into the curriculum that they rewrote and look for areas where they can add opportunities for students to think in open-ended, divergent ways that are more complex, more creative, and more innovative. So the Common Core is if it's in your state, you have to work within that confine, but there's nothing that limits you to going into the Common Core and making revisions to the standards so that they become more complex.
Very interesting. Could you maybe say a little bit, to help the listeners, could you say a little bit more about the distinction you made between difficulty or hardness and what you think is really important, complexity?
Sure, absolutely. So we looked at a lot of literature in terms of neuroscience and brain-based education, and one of the best definitions we found came from David Sousa. He defined complexity as the thought processes required to address a specific task. Uh-huh. So you can think about it like this. Complexity can be thought of as the difference between remembering a fact or imitating a procedure or developing an original project, conclusion, or a process. So difficulty would be this idea of maybe remembering several facts at a time or following a multi-step process, where complexity would be actually developing an original product, coming to an original conclusion based on evidence, making an inference, or coming up with an original process to solve a problem.
I get it. So complexity is not an additive thing, and it involves more open-ended thinking, that's thinking out of the box. But difficulty is just more stages.
More work.
Yeah.
You can think of difficulty
more busy
as more work.
Work.
For example, asking students to solve an addition problem with two one-digit numbers
right.
is less difficult than solving the same problem with four one-digit
right.
numbers. It's
right.
just more work, more
right.
steps.
Right.
It's not more complex.
Right.
Okay, so it's easy then to make things harder. It actually requires some thought to make things more complex.
Absolutely.
Okay, and so then move that back then to the Common Core standards in your study. So you're saying that at least compared to the 2009 state standards in New Jersey, the Common Core state standards actually do not provide that layer of complexity. That's what they were sold and told to us that they were going to do, right?
Sure. When you go on the Common Core website, you know they have language that says they're based on higher order, higher level thinking. That's not the case. They might be more difficult, as some studies have shown, but difficulty does not equal complexity, and that's our point here. And keep in mind that the 2009 New Jersey standards were no prize either. So we're not at all advocating for a return to what New Jersey had. What we're advocating for is a more nuanced look at what we're teaching kids and how can we go about teaching students the content that people think is important, but in ways that develop creative, innovative, and strategic thinking.
You're listening to Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk Radio. We are speaking with author, researcher Christopher Tankin, and we are looking at his newest study that takes the Common Core state standards, lays them next to the New Jersey state standards, and says which are more complex, not the Common Core. Okay, so you're not advocating, though, that things were better in the past?
No, what we found was more complex thinking in the former standards. For example, let's take language arts. The Common Core state standards in language arts, 28% of those standards are at level 3 and level 4, creative and strategic thinking, compared to the former New Jersey standards, 38% of the language arts standards offer those kind of opportunities. In math, once again, you had almost 40% of the former math standards offering higher level thinking compared to 10% in the Common Core. So the Common Core is more dominated by what is known as procedural and declarative knowledge. And that knowledge is important. We're not saying it is not. Mm-hmm. But when you weight standards more, almost dominate them with procedural and declarative knowledge, what you end up with is what Runko and Chad termed functional fixedness. So we're training kids to think convergently, to think close-ended towards one right answer. Instead of what we should be thinking of, because it's such an unknown future, we need to help kids think about ways to come up with original solutions to ill-structured problems. You only get that through creative and strategic thinking.
You point out a very specific, and for me, touches my heart because it seems to point to the social studies. I'll actually quote here. You say, quote, one way to inject creativity and strategic thinking into curricula is to add activities that focus on socially conscious problem solving. Problem-based activities derived from issues found in American society as well as international issues have a long track record of providing students the opportunities to engage in creative and strategic thinking. I love that because I would say that that's exactly what the social studies do. Can you expand, though, more on what that was about?
Absolutely. But socially conscious, problem-based instruction requires students to think in open-ended ways, come up with original solutions to these very ill-structured problems that we face in society and in the globe. There's not one right answer for environmental stewardship. There's not one right answer for poverty. There's not one right answer for gun violence. There's many different answers, and that's what we need kids to grapple with. We need students to grapple with this idea that answers and the future is very uncertain. We need to use the best evidence that we have to come up with practical solutions. They may not be the best solutions, but they're practical solutions that can help society move forward.
Is there a fear, though, in the uncertainty, and maybe is that what's holding us back? Is we don't want to expose children to uncertainty. We want everything to be certain and predictable for them. I mean, we don't want to admit that the possibility is that we don't know exactly what's best.
Well, I think that's one of the issues we're facing with the current policymaking environment. It seems as if some policymakers are trying to take a very complex and uncertain future and somehow create it or present it as something that is very simple and linear. And that's just not the way the world works. If we're not preparing students for uncertainty, then I think we're doing them a disservice. We have to prepare students for the world that will be. And since that is uncertain, we need to provide them with skills and dispositions that transcend content and transcend time to help them be more creative, innovative, entrepreneurial, strategic, critical thinkers, so on and so forth.
And you don't
get that through a curriculum dominated with procedural and declarative knowledge.
Right. And yet the rhetoric surrounding the Common Core State Standards, as you said earlier, leads people to think that they are meeting those creative, think out of the box qualities. What a pity this wasn't all discussed at the draft stages of the Common Core State Standards, right? Would you like to see the end of Common Core State Standards, or is there something we can do to change them? What do you hope to be the reaction to this piece of research?
I think there's a couple different levels of action that's required. In terms of what we're speaking about in the study, I think if you're a teacher, you really need to look at the curriculum that you've been given, and you need to look for opportunities where you can inject some problem-based situations where you have kids think more openly in more creative ways. If you're a high school principal or a superintendent, I believe you have the professional and moral responsibility to review that curriculum, to make sure that it's offering the kind of opportunities that we're calling for in the article. And then if you're a policymaker, I think you really need to potentially become more open-minded and be prepared to jettison the Common Core or allow your school districts to make an informed choice as to whether they want to continue to participate in it. Remember, the history of public education in the United States, it was a very locally controlled endeavor
right.
for a very long time. And communities have historically had the ability to make decisions about what it is and how it is their students learn, you know, certain aspects of the curriculum. And I think a lot of that was removed with the Common Core, and I believe it needs to be replaced. It doesn't include the skills that you find in the mainstream literature that people are saying are required for an uncertain future.
When you really dig down deep, people are saying we want creative, problem-solving, entrepreneurial, independent thinking students who understand that they have a, you know, a moral, ethical position in the world. And it's very important. If you're going to say that's what you want, well, then you hopefully have some type of curriculum and or standards in place that would be promoting that. And Chris, the Common Core might not be doing that.
No, exactly. And let's be clear. We're not saying that the content that's included in the Common Core is not important. This isn't about content. It's about how students come to experience that content and then what can they do with it afterwards. When you look at the way the Common Core is organized for students, and then also, quite honestly, the way it's tested by the two major testing consortiums, what I'm seeing is a curriculum that was called for in 1893 and 1895 by the committees of 10 and the committees of 15. I don't see a curricular package or standard or whatever you want to call it, that's going to lead us into the future. I see our kid being exposed to skills that students in other countries who will work for $10 a day can already do. So that's not preparing my children for global competitiveness. If we're giving them skills that people in other countries already possess and are willing to work for $10 and $5 a day.
Well, there you have it. From the man, Christopher Tankin, the Journal of Scholarship and Practice for the American Superintendents Association, the research article, A Comparison of Higher Order Thinking Between Common Core State Standards and the 2009 New Jersey Content Standards in High School by Christopher Tankin and Associates. Chris, thanks for being on the show. Good to know that beyond just surface criticism of the Common Core, there's some people now like you that are really starting to dig deep and express the concerns.
Yeah, thanks for this careful work, Chris.
Yeah, we need more of it, so keep it up.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss the study.
Hey, I wonder if Matt Damon's mom has any thoughts on the Common Core.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
The Common Core and the way that it's written and the kinds of standards that it identifies influence curriculum and the teaching process. What happens is that teachers, in an effort to accomplish these Common Core standards, end up direct teaching with flashcards or, you know, drill-based instruction and go over these graphemes and go over the long and short vowels and have kids memorizing these things so that they can accomplish these standards. And so it's ended up in much more teacher-led instruction of this very specific kind. And the very experiential play-based learning that children need is disappearing and has disappeared, and we have research showing that, from kindergartens all around the country. So the very ways that kids need to build concepts and ideas, the ways they do and the ways they need to be able to do, are disappearing, and instead they're getting this teacher-led, very specific skill-based instruction.
So not to put too fine a point on it, it sounds like these standards basically do violence to the way young children exist.
Yeah, I think
young children exist in the world in a different way to the way older children exist, and certainly different to the way adults exist. They have imaginations. They're learning to speak. They're capable of extraordinary things.
If you've ever seen some of the things kids turn out in a Reggio Emilia program, for example,
right.
I mean, it's extraordinary what they can do. Their imaginations are more flourishing and rich probably than any time in their lives because they're not bound by the kind of logical thinking that comes in later. But I've heard some educators I respect a lot call this child abuse.
Let's welcome Paul Thomas, author of the Radical Scholarship blog. Paul, you like to call your blog a pedagogy of kindness. Radical and kindness, those are two words you don't often hear together.
Well, sadly, I would say in the U.S., kindness is radical. One thing that kind of runs through many of my posts is sort of what I would call a nasty attitude toward children. There's sort of an authoritarian attitude toward children in our schools, but also in our culture. And two people, Kurt Vonnegut I pulled directly from, but also Barbara Kingsolver has a really good essay that I quoted a good bit, where she's been visiting Europe, and when she comes back to the United States, the first thing she notices is the profound difference in the attitude toward children. So I think it's sad to say, but I believe taking a stance of kindness is radical in the U.S.
So it's radical nowadays to be kind, and Paul, thank you for being radical and for being kind. But I want to get specifically at an issue you've been targeting in your blog posts. You've got a gripe with education journalists.
Yes, I've been in education for 34 years. Most of that was as a public school teacher, particularly in the last almost 15 years now, because I've been doing more public work. It's very disturbing, the persistent misrepresentation of education by the media. And then when you directly engage with individual journalists, it's pretty stunning how they respond when you tell them that their basic claims aren't accurate or true.
Is your biggest complaint that they don't talk to you or me or education people? Is that the heart of their problem?
Well, I would say it's basically two things. One is sort of the essential nature of journalism, looking at both sides. And I've mentioned the John Oliver perspective, where he jokes about how climate change is presented as always having one person for and one against, which completely misrepresents how science sees climate change.
Right.
So I'd say there is a basic journalist problem. The other is they believe that means they're objective. But as I pointed out with NPR's coverage of GRIT, they always forefront one position and then will sneak in and say something like, some people are upset with, or some people disagree.
Right.
So it's never really objective, because it immediately makes it seem that the GRIT position is preferable or more legitimate. So, you know, that sort of, I would say there's a journalism problem. And then secondarily to that is, as I've been stressing lately, they don't make much of an effort to talk to educators and scholars of education. The Motoko Rich piece from the New York Times that I highlighted, there are think tank presidents, there are business people, there's the superintendent of education in South Carolina, and there's even sort of a nod towards student perspectives at the end. And I think I went over this with my certifiers, and I think there's 8 or 9 people quoted, not one teacher and not one scholar of education. That's typical.
That's bothered me for a long time. I've written about it in my own blog on Busted Pencils a couple of times, but you know, you've really come at this and said, you know, look, in fact, you've engaged some of these journalists in the,
right,
you know, the very sophisticated Twitter war.
I've talked to them on the phone.
Okay.
I've been with them on Twitter. Generally, they are dismissive and they're offended, which I find kind of interesting, because it seems to be okay for journalists relentlessly to say that educators are bad and that schools are bad. But if you call into question journalists, that you're somehow being offensive. I find that really odd. But also, the really strange thing to me is that when you give them claims that are supported by evidence, one, they act as if they've never heard it before, and two, they will not accept it as credible, much less, you know, give in that it's the accurate position.
I think a lot of educators feel that same frustration. I know me, perfect example I can throw in there too to match yours, is that I get called here by the local news to come on to comment on a certain topic, and I'll agree, and the reporter's immediate response is, and can you recommend somebody who disagrees with you? I can, but they'd be wrong.
Right, exactly.
Check out Paul's blog, radicalscholarship.wordpress.com. Pedagogy of Kindness, Paul, Actress of the Week. Keep busting pencils, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
Time for our weekly tribute to famous activist Howard Zinn with our Moment of Zinn.
Protest beyond the law is not a departure from democracy. It is absolutely essential to it.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, log on to bustedpencils.com to keep up with trending news, hear parts of the show, and nominate an Actress of the Week.
For Jed Hopkins, I'm Tim Slecker, and thanks for busting pencils.